first this morning. A new report by a right-wing think tank says recreational fishers are part of the problem for depleting fish stocks and says urgent changes to management are needed. The New Zealand Initiative says future generations of New Zealanders won't be able to fish the way they traditionally have unless there's action. The report's author, Dr. Randall Bess, is a former manager at the Ministry of Primary Industries. He says some fish stocks are getting overfished and management of the recreational fishing sector remains hands-off. Dr. Bess says with an increasing population, there will be more pressure on fish stocks and further constraints like minimum size, bag limits and even seasonal closures of some fishing areas. Welcome, Randall.
Oh, welcome. Yes, thank you.
What are the main problems that you've identified with recreational fishing at the moment?
Well, first of all, I don't want to focus on the problems. It's more the case of actually recognizing that the situation for recreational fishers here remains pretty good when you compare what their experience is to those of foreign fishers in other coastal nations. So I think we should really, you know, recognize that the situation is quite good, but, you know, we can't really be too complacent about that because for those of us who have been involved in fisheries for a long time, we know that they can change real fast. And if it changes for one sector, it's generally changing for the others as well, just as fast. So what we're doing with this report is saying, okay, we're doing fine now. Many people are comfortable with their recreational fishing experience, but it's certainly not what it was decades ago. For those who remember fishing here, let's say back 50 years ago in the 60s, you know, commonly the recollection is it was much better then. You know, it was easier to catch what they wanted, and generally there was a greater range of age classes, you know, different size of fish. And so we've gone through a period where there's been a buildup, of course, of commercial fishing in the inshore fisheries, and so that's significantly changed a number of the fish stocks. And many of them are rebuilding, and some need to be rebuilt quite a bit more, but nonetheless, they are looking much better than they used to. So what we're doing with this report, we're saying, okay, we've got to this point where we're still doing well, but let's look into the future and see what that recreational fishing experience might be. So is it conceivable it's going to be what it is now? Probably not. And when we look at, as mentioned, the population increase, we've just hit 4.7 million. In the 1960s, the population was just about half what it is now. Then we have the projections in terms of increasing to 5 million by 2025, which isn't that far off. Then increasing to 5.8 million by 2050. And we've also had another factor that to consider with these population projections, and that is the net migration. We've had a record this last year of increase of 68,400, which is a long ways from the long-term average of about 10,000 a year. So when we put those factors into the equation, we start asking ourselves, well, what will that fishing experience be in the future? Are we doing enough now to ensure that we're able to fish as we can right now? And what's it going to be like for our children and their children? That's really what we're after here.
The total recreational catch currently allows for 25,000 tons. Mm-hmm. Is that something that needs to be revised because of all those areas of concern you just mentioned?
Well, it's continually revised. In total, yes, all the allowances for recreational fishing total about 25,000 tons, but we know from the most recent research that the take is probably considerably less than that. But nonetheless, there is that most contentious issue in fisheries management, which is the allowances between the sometimes competing fishing sectors. How much does the Minister for Primary Industries allow for commercial relative to recreational, and then, of course, the allowances for customary non-commercial take as well? That's a very contentious issue, and that's one of the factors to always look at. It has, of course, a huge bearing on what the recreational fishing experience will be, and many other factors that relate to managing fisheries.
Well, let's have a look at the key challenges that you identify in your report. You say that several inshore fisheries demonstrate the need for ongoing decreases in daily bag limits. That's something that will, I'm sure, alarm a lot of recreational fishers listening to that. Increases in the minimum legal sizes, this also has been happening, but of concern. And seasonal closures in the future, something that's also happening. Are we likely to see more of this? Do daily bag limits need to be brought down in some areas?
Well, I think it's quite likely. I wouldn't couch the situation as recreational fishers being part of the problem. It's more the case of everyone's part of the problem if you're involved in taking fish. And so it's a matter of, you know, looking at what it is that people expect in terms of that experience and what obligations do we have to meet and working out what's best. Now, let's just look factually at what has happened in some of the fisheries, such as the Snapper 1 fishery on the upper northeast side of the North Island. The bag limits have gone from 30 to 20 to 15 to 9 and 7. So unless we do something, it's very unlikely that that negative trend is going to reverse. So we're just simply asking the question, what are we happy with a bag limit of 7? Many people would be, but fisheries have a habit of not staying constant. There's a chance that we could see that downward trend continuing. And is that something as a nation we want to see, or do we want to take the action now to start preparing for that recreational experience being at least maintained, if not improved, for future generations?
I have to say, in the report, you're most critical of the management here, saying there's an underlying problem of complacency in managing recreational fisheries and a hands-off approach that's simply not sustainable. So what needs to happen here?
Well, in all fairness to those who are involved in managing fisheries, and many of them I, of course, know quite well, and they're very dedicated to their job, but I think it's fair to say that across the board, coastal nations have been rather complacent when it comes to managing recreational fisheries. But it's now to the situation for many of those coastal nations, including New Zealand, that where the amount of recreational take is significant. It's no longer a marginal activity that has little, if any, impact on the sustainability of fish stocks. It's a growing segment of the total take, and in some cases, the recreational take can exceed the commercial take. And in some fisheries, we can anticipate that happening more and more. So, yes, there's complacency. I think that, in my view, MPI has lost capability and capacity over the last few years. That has to do with the merger back in the creation of Ministry for Primary Industries. There's clearly been a reduction in what the fisheries management function can do. And they're starting to address that. But at this point, they haven't really allocated that much resources to the management of recreational fisheries. They're too important to keep kind of as a secondary consideration. Of course, the majority of the focus has gone to the commercial sector in terms of management issues. And I think something really needs to be done about that.
Well, that was my next question, in fact. I mean, comparatively speaking, what's the level of impact of recreational fishing versus commercial fisheries?
Well, as mentioned, in some fisheries, you know, the take is significant for rec fishers, and so the impact is great. With others, it's not so much, and of course, there's many fisheries where recreational interest is extremely low, if any. So it all depends on the particular fishery. What I'm getting at is that we're now getting a better understanding of how much people spend on recreational fishing, how important it is, but we can certainly understand those dynamics a whole lot better. And they need to be fed into the whole management of a fish stock. And at the same time, look at the way the allocations are made.
Well, that's the thing. If you're looking at fish stocks, you can't just look at recreational fishes in isolation. I believe that you've got more reports coming out. Are you going to look specifically at the impact of commercial fisheries? Because there's been a lot of concern about that, and also the policing, the management of commercial fishers, and the lobbying ability of commercial fishers.
That's right. The lobbying goes both ways, too. But we're focusing on the recreational the management of recreational fisheries and the issues that are most pertinent to that, because we've had such a focus on the commercial side of things. You know, there's just a plethora of documents about commercial fishing in New Zealand, but hardly any really in comparison for the recreational sector. So that's our focus. And you're right, you know, we cannot look at one versus the other. Please read my report, What's the Catch, because it gives a nice overview of how all the fishing sectors are managed here. And it is quite critical of the commercial sector. I've been involved in some way with the commercial sector for a long time. In fact, that's where my primary research was done, in the fishing industry. I've been quite critical in this report about the fishing industry in terms of the issues that have arisen in the media recently regarding the discarding, high grading, and misreporting of commercial catches. This is an issue that's been long-standing and it simply hasn't been dealt with. And I hate to say it, but from the responses by MPI, I don't think they take it that seriously. And that's a big problem. It really needs to be addressed.
And that must be having an impact on just what we've been talking about in terms of fish supplies. Perhaps that's the greater reason why fishers are getting fewer catches.
I suspect that has a the level of discards can have a significant impact.
Well, that and overfishing.
That's right. Well, overfishing, yes, as mentioned, the legislation requires, you know, fisheries to be managed sustainably, but it can take quite a while for that to happen. There can be ongoing improvements made to the way a fishery is managed. And yes, some are overfished by commercial fishers. Some are at that stage, yes.
Dr. Best, stay on the line if you would. Bring into the conversation Jeff Rowling, president of the lobby group Our Fishing Future, which aims to promote and protect responsible recreational fishing. He's also a former president of the Recreational Fishing Council. Good morning, Jeff.
Hey, good morning, Lynn.
What's your view of the main points in this report?
I've listened to Randall. That was quite interesting. I think the first thing I'd like to say is that the fish stocks in New Zealand we view as a public resource, and what we've seen over the last 40 years or so is a slow and steady privatisation of those resources. So there's a little bit of a disjoint between the publicly available fish and then sort of what's been essentially locked up for commercial use. So yeah, we don't make any apology for going out and catching ourselves a feed of fish, and I don't think that we should. We're Pacific Islanders living on an island nation in the bottom of the Pacific, and we should be allowed to go and catch some fish, which is not to say that we don't have a responsibility to be part of the management framework, but you know, just to make sure that everybody understands that we see access to fish for the New Zealand public as being quite important.
Do you feel the current management structure that we were talking to Dr. Bess about is hands-off, or is it working well?
Well, interesting statement, hands-off. I'd actually venture to suggest that over the last few years there's been quite a lot of hands-on management of recreational fishing. All of the regulations that have been put in place around the top of the Marlborough Sounds, and you know the fishery was actually closed to recreational fishing whilst it was still open for commercial fishing for a couple of years, and it now has some really stringent controls on it and a seasonal closure as well. And you know, there have been a number of other bag limit reductions in various species around the country, so I don't think it's quite true to say that there's a hands-off approach. That seems to be a little bit confused within the commercial sector with the fact that recreational fishers aren't required to report their catch in the same way that commercial fishers are. And I think that sort of leads to people believing that there's a hands-off approach. In fact, there's quite a hands-on approach, and there have been quite a lot of changes over the last few years. But I do agree with Randall about the future. We have to look towards the future, an increasing population and an increasing pressure on our natural resources, and this applies to a whole lot of things. You know, water's been one of the things that's been pretty much in the media of recent times, a lot of pressure there. and fish stocks are no different. So, you know, don't get me wrong, I'm not saying that it's all commercial's fault and it should all go to the public. I think we all have a part to play in developing the solutions for ensuring that we maintain abundant fish stocks that are accessible to everybody.
What are some of those solutions then, Jeff, that could be brought in quickly?
Well, in recent years, we seem to have been operating in pretty much a policy vacuum from the political leaders, that there is a difficulty around the allocation of fish stocks and who gets access to them and the lack of certainty around that. We would maintain that quite a lot of the allowances that have been made in terms of tonnages by species for public use are quite ridiculous. I'd give an example of the local Gurnard fishery, where their commercial allowance is 800 tonnes a year and ours is 20 tonnes a year, which equates to less than one fish per person of those that go fishing in the top of the South Island. That's one fish per year, not one fish per day. So, yeah, the allowances and the system for arriving at them needs to be looked at to ensure there's a bit more equity in those. And especially if there's the holy grail of the fishing industry is for the public sector to be locked into only being allowed to catch whatever tonnage of fish is allowed to us on an annual basis, that if that's to ever be the case, well, then those tonnages most certainly need to be adjusted and made seem to be reasonable.
What about bag limits? We do tend to hear a passionate outcry when bag limits are reduced, and Randall explained there have been substantial reductions in the past few years. Perhaps there might be more to come. Is that something that recreational fishers simply have to accept?
They have been having to accept them in the same way that the commercial fishers have had to accept cuts in quotas at various times. So, you know, it's not just happening to one sector. If a fishery's suffering and going down, well, it is incumbent upon us all to play some part in rebuilding it. So the bag limit argument, it becomes one of the... It goes back to that allocation stuff that I was talking about. It is one of the few ways that the public fishing right is defined. And given the lack of a policy framework within which to operate properly, we tend to get quite emotional about defending our bag limits. And is that being a sort of a definition of our right? And at times I think it's a bit of an exercise in semantics, but I think if we felt that the public sector had a real place sitting around the table of discussing fisheries management and had a adequately funded, democratically elected organisation that was able to have decent science provision and participate in all the processes that are available, then discussions would be able to be had about spatial separation or bag limit reductions and, you know, various trade-offs that could occur that would be good for maintaining abundance and good for looking after our inshore marine environments.
Thank you very much, Jeff Rowling. Also heard from Dr. Randall.